Yeah, I think that, you know, everybody's going through things at this time of the year, and you know, we're doing a good job in helping each other out, and you know, the burden doesn't lay on certain people. They're spreading it out, and everybody's doing their job and making it easy for each other. And again, you know, it's never going to be easy this time of the year. You're going to go through things, and you just have to find a way to fight through it. And, you know, it's no different for me than it is for anybody else.
They will count it out here, and that'll do it. For the first time since 2007, the Ottawa Senators are on their way to the Eastern Conference Finals.
That I was the star.
Welcome back. It is hour number four on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. We've got two Game 7s coming up, including in Washington in less than 90 minutes. That's where Pierre McGuire is, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, they're here. As promised, we're going to Paris, where Tom Tebbit will be in 2 weeks at the French Open, on site for the World Hockey Championship. Hope he hasn't spilled any wine. Gord Miller, how are you?
I'm good, sir, but I'm going to start by correcting you.
Yes.
There are two games seven tonight, apparently. Oh, that's the correct grammar.
Jesus. There are two games seven? Who talks like that?
Attorney General.
You would probably say, I worked for TSN with Bob McKenzie in March of 96 for the last game at Montreal Forum. Is that what you used to say?
No, why would I say that? I did.
No, but it was the Forum, even though, you know, technically it's Forum. You started this. Yeah. You started this. How much wine have you had?
Good point by you.
Oh, what? Yeah, well, thank you.
Not enough.
No. You and Ray did a lot of Ottawa Senators games this season. Are you in any way, shape, or form surprised by this?
A little bit, for sure. I mean, obviously, I mean, I thought they'd be a bubble team to make the playoffs, and they kind of were. Look, I think the greatest thing out of this whole thing, and it's disappointing that it's had to happen this way, is that people are realizing how great Erik Karlsson is. And I know you got on me for beating the drum for Erik Karlsson all year.
No, I didn't.
And
Well, you got
tired of it. You got tired of me, you know, droning on about Karlsson.
No. That's not true. I got tired of you saying that P.K. Subban wasn't as good as he is.
No, I never said that. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But I think that the fact is that Erik Karlsson is not just the best defenseman in the game. He's one of the best players in the game. He is one of the five best players in the NHL. And he has been for a long time. If it's taken this playoff run for people to realize that, that's fine, but he's been this good for a really long time.
One of those guys that, you know, that's like all the other top quality stars that evolve into, you know, winners, you know, whether it's the Crosbys and those guys, that's what he has. He's got that, not just the technical qualities, he's got the emotional and physical qualities, and he's definitely been a real team guy. So he's become a terrific leader.
There's his coach, of course, and watching these games at this time of year, it's like when they need a boost, he provides it.
But he does it night in and night out. Like without him, honestly, Mitch, without him, they're a lottery team. Without him, they're a team probably in the bottom six or seven in the standings. That's how good he is.
And Pierre,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Pierre, as you know, going back and forth, he said he is in agony right now. Like,
yeah.
He's in agony. He's playing on one foot.
Yeah, and you know, it's great. He's having a great playoff. I think it's fantastic, and I think all the accolades are deserved. But this should have been coming his way a lot sooner. People don't watch Ottawa games or whatever it is. But, I mean, when you watch him night in, night out, he's breathtaking.
Yeah.
Like he won't get MVP. You know, he won't get MVP votes. He's not a finalist. But the fact is, if you go by the strict criteria of the award, the player most valuable to his team, it's hard to think of a player who's more valuable to his team than he is.
Well, there is another trophy. There is another trophy with the word valuable in it that's up for grabs, and he has to be leading, right? I mean, there's a long way to go here.
Yeah, we're halfway through, or just about halfway through. Yeah, I mean, a long way to go yet, but for sure. I mean, if the voting ended right, if the season ended right now, yeah, he'd be the winner.
Well, one of the reasons I think that he wasn't universally praised to the degree that he should have been is probably because of the, you know, some old school people pointing out that he's on the ice a lot, that he gets caught up the ice a lot, that his own coaches would come down on him sometimes for not being back where he's quote unquote supposed to be. I think that probably lent itself to some of the.
But a lot of that was reputation. I think a lot of it is the way he looks that way. He erases most of his own mistakes. He's an elite skater. I mean, he's a fantastic skater. So a lot of times he gets caught, he comes back and catches up. You know, Ottawa doesn't have the surrounding cast that other teams would have. I don't see it. I've never really seen it. He doesn't get caught in bad pinches very often. He doesn't get caught in the wrong side of the ice very often. I just don't see it. Now, has his game changed somewhat this year? Yeah, but not as much as people think. He kind of chuckles about it when you talk to him, you know, about, you know, how much his game has allegedly changed. He's playing the same game. The team around him is playing a different game because Boucher's got a different style. But I have to be honest. I mean, he doesn't look that different than what I've seen the last two or three years. And I'm very fortunate to get to watch him close up. I've seen some of the best players in the game the last 10 years. He's right there with all of them.
With Gord Miller on site at the World Hockey Championship in Canada plays France tomorrow. We'll get to that in a moment and a few other things, along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. So you think they have a shot? Well, of course they have a shot. But who do you think is a better match? Who do you think is a better matchup for them? Pittsburgh or Washington?
Washington.
Because?
Because I think they match up better against the Capitals. I think the Penguins' depth, assuming the Penguins are healthy, the Penguins' depth would give them problems.
Where's the depth?
Well, I think when you look at, with Crosby and Malkin down the middle to start with, that would give them trouble.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant beyond that. I thought you meant like
injured
guys coming back or something. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the head to head. You know, those two head to head would give them trouble as opposed to a Washington team. I think if you can contain that top line for Washington, although what that top line is remains in flux, but if you contain that top line, I think Ottawa can match them top line for top line, and they can handle what's left. I'm not sure once they get past Crosby if they have an answer for Malkin.
For Washington tonight, Gord, given everything that the franchise has been through since 98, and I know it doesn't affect every single player on the team, but it does affect the franchise, given that they've been through it so many times, can you develop some kind of immunity to that tension, that pressure, or will it still have a tangible effect?
You know, it's funny you say that, Rob, because really, you're right. Most of these players haven't been around for a lot of it. I mean, you know, the Joffrey Lupul overtime goal in 2009 in overtime, you know, there's only like five players left from that team. And yet they get asked about it every single day, so it does become the narrative. It does become part of the story, unfortunately for them, because they get asked about it all the time. To me, you just go out and play tonight. I mean, you can't get caught up in what happened in previous years and 8 of 9 series and all that. You just go out and play a hockey game tonight. It's hard to do, though. It becomes part of the crushing narrative of the Washington Capitals. And it's the same thing for Anaheim. You know, the Game 7. Now, different for Anaheim because this core has been together through a lot of recent Game 7 disappointments. Up 3-2, lose Game 6, lose Game 7. That's different because that group's been through a lot of that together. But for the Capitals, I mean, look, you've battled back. You're in Game 7. Play the game. Easier said than done.
What you said about Anaheim, you know, and there's word out of Anaheim, if they lose another Game 7, there are going to be big changes. We heard that about San Jose a few years ago, right? And we're still...
I don't know how you do that. I just think that, you know, at this level now, at this stage of the NHL, I really think that if you get to Game 7 in the second round, it becomes a toss-up. And sometimes it doesn't go your way. And beyond that, you just keep banging away. Anaheim's got a really good team. Ripping that apart would be a mistake. You just keep knocking on the door and hope you break through. You know, look at Chicago. The Hawks have won 3 of the last 7 Stanley Cups. They've also lost in the first round 3 times.
You know, Dallas is in one of those situations where obviously if you're training for somebody like Ben, they want to address that situation. And
All I can say is if he does sign there, they're getting a first-class individual to start with. He was a great teammate, and he was a big reason. You know, we had the success we had the last few years.
There's the head coach of Team Canada and the coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who knows Ben Bishop pretty well, on Bishop being acquired by Dallas, yeah. And he's already said he wants to sign with them for obvious reasons. Gord, a week ago, we talked about how you were just getting to know him a little bit better. A week later, what can you share with us?
Getting to know who?
John Cooper.
Well, I've known John for 10 years.
Oh, I thought you were just getting to know him.
No, I've known John forever.
Oh, well, no, you haven't. You've known him for 10 years. That's not forever. That's a long time, but it's not
like
forever.
Yeah. Seems like forever. He's terrific. I've always liked John. He's we've crossed paths over the years, and he's a really sharp, interesting guy, very confident, and relates really well to players. I think players, you know, he's harder than you think he'd be. You know, the way he carries himself in press conferences in public is different than what he's like behind the scenes. Pretty fierce guy, but no, he's a very sharp guy, and I think he recognizes when to use his voice and when not to, and that's a great thing for a coach to know. I think the one thing that Scotty Bowman had a great influence on Mike Babcock was change the record once in a while, back mm-hmm. off once in a while.
His defense corps, there's obvious reasons for a lot of interest around here because three guys are Montrealers. Right?
Yeah.
What kind of team? A lot of people, as you know, no offense, but a lot of people are just checking into the World Hockey Championship. What kind of team are they going to see?
They've got a very up-tempo team with a lot of good young players. This line of Marner, Point, and Konechny is incredible. Point's 21, Konechny's 20, and Mitch Marner just turned 20. Every time they're on the ice, they create something. It really is something. They could be part of the mix for Hockey Canada for the next 10 years and be a great line for them. They're really good. The defense is pretty good. They'll get Colton Parayko over the weekend, which will help them out. Mike Matheson's having another great tournament for Canada. He's a terrific player. Mark Edward Vlasic is his usual steady, great self. You don't notice him except, you know, the fact that he makes good decision after good decision. And so they're pretty good. I mean, I think that, you know, they've rolled through this thing so far. Two real good teams on the other side. The Russians and the Swedes look really good. The Swedish defense, this would be their Olympic defense minus, if NHLers were going to the Olympics, this would be their defense minus Erik Karlsson.
Do you believe that there's still a tiny chance that we could get...
No.
It's okay.
It's done.
All right. Yeah, well, that's what I figure. But Rennie Fassell, you know, he's Mr. Positive, and he's going to keep going here.
But if you watch the interview with Darren Dreger today, like he talked to Bettman yesterday, it's over.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, where do we go from here? I don't believe there's going to be a World Cup in 2020 because I think there's going to be a lockout in the fall of 2020. So if the players reopen... So the players can announce in 2019 the reopening of the deal for 2020. If they do that, the NHL will not have a World Cup. They will not go through the thing in 2004 where they had a World Cup and the lockout happened 2 days later. That's not going to happen. So I don't believe we'll see a World Cup in 2020. The NHL probably wants to go to Beijing in 2022. If that happens, from what I'm hearing here, the IHF will probably say, okay, but you got to pay your own way. It could be a long time. I think Calgary's getting the 2026 Winter Olympics. It could be that long until we see best on best again.
Yeah, 2026. Where are we? What year is this?
2017.
That feels like to me. It feels like 1973. Is there any buzz there among all of the international intrigue that goes on when so many countries are represented? Who might be the next director of the FBI?
There's not. No. although I have been, I'm stealing this line from the internet. I've been busy duplicating VHSs because there's no FBI director. So that warning that comes up at the beginning, I'm just copying DVDs and VHSs like crazy. Because the FBI apparently is directorless.
Oh, man. But in all seriousness, you've been there as a political junkie. You've been there at a very exciting, dramatic, and interesting, and frankly, uplifting time, as it turned out.
Interesting, yeah. Really, the victory celebration was about two blocks from our hotel here. And very interesting time here. A lot of the same conversations that have been had in North America were had here. a different result, but a long way to go. I think, you know, they have parliamentary elections here. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen yet. And as excited as people are, he could wind up, you know, not having any power. So that's sort of a different factor here. But it's pretty interesting here. And also, I must say, you know, having been to Paris, I think this is my eighth or ninth time here, a much greater security presence than I've seen any time I've been here before. There's much tighter security. Every metro station has police officers and soldiers at it. It's a much tighter security system than we've seen in the past.
So without going into too much detail, I mean, France's new president, Macron, he's going to be the youngest president since Napoleon. And what I found really interesting, Gord...
How'd that turn out?
Yeah. Well, hopefully this goes a little bit better. But what I love, this guy, he's never run for elected office before, but he was a cabinet minister a couple of years ago. Yeah. He had a very, elitist upbringing, an upper-class upbringing, and yet he was able to project himself as a man of the people, populist type, who's also pro-business and cares about social causes. Like, can we see someone like that in the States, for example?
I don't know. So here's what's going to happen in France. They're going to have parliamentary elections in June. They're out canvassing for candidates on Facebook because he's the leader of a party that doesn't really exist. So they don't have any candidates. If he can't put together a majority in parliament, then they pick a prime minister and he's powerless. So all this hope and optimism could be done in a month. Could we see that in the United States? I don't believe so. I just think it's too fractured. It's too splintered. People have retreated to getting their news from whatever outlet aligns with their views. I don't think we'll see that in the States.
And in conclusion, I know it's Ray's first trip over there, and you've kind of been showing him around some of the obvious markers in history. And there was an emotional visit. Was it yesterday or today for you?
Yeah,
guys?
Yesterday I went to Normandy. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you share that with our listeners?
It's really. I've been before, and to be honest, it's no different going the third time than the first. It is just an overwhelming experience. I would say to anyone who can hear my voice right now that you need to come here and see Vimy Ridge and see Benny-Sumer, which is the Canadian cemetery. It's a beautiful... Benny-Sumer is about 5 kilometers inland from Juneau Beach, where the Canadians landed. It's on a little secluded road. The local townspeople care for it as an ongoing gift to the Canadian people. It's not the size or grandeur of the American cemetery in Normandy, but it's a beautiful, serene, amazing place. My grandfather's brother is buried there, and you walk through the stones, and it's 22, 21, 23, 24, and you think about it. We go to hockey games all the time with young men that age, and you think about what those young men went through and sacrificed. And then you go to Normandy, the American cemetery, with 10,000 graves in one place. And it really is overwhelming. And to understand our history, to understand what that generation did is really important. And to know the history and to appreciate it is important. And I hope that, and it was amazing, you know, it was a Tuesday afternoon when Ray and I visited, and there were hundreds of people visiting, in the middle of a work day. Which was really heartwarming to see, but it's a very humbling, overwhelming thing to see. And it's hard to imagine what they did, and it's hard to imagine how they succeeded. When you go to Pointe du Hoc, which is between Utah and Omaha Beach, with the 90-foot cliffs that the Army Rangers scaled to take out an artillery emplacement, you stand at that cliff and say, they climbed that under fire? It's unimaginable.
Gord Miller on site in Paris. Thanks for that, Gord.